What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I am Pete.
And on The Stack, we're going to talk about a bunch of comics that come out this very Wednesday.
Today, then.
Yeah, exactly. Today, unless you're listening to it tomorrow, in which case, it's not Wednesday.
Or some other day.
Do you know what my favorite part of The Stack is when we talk about time? I really enjoy that thing at the beginning where we clarify what day people are listening to stuff
I'm sure they really enjoy that, too.
I think so, too. We have a ton of comics we're going to talk about, so we should jump into it. But to give you guys a list, we're going to be talking about Ruin World number one. This is from Boom Studios. We got Farmhand number one and Outpost Zero number one from Image Comics. From DC Comics, we're going to do Superman number one, The Flash number 50, and Wonder Woman, number 50. And from Marvel Comics, we're going to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number one and X-23 number one. Pete, I think you know what we got to kick this off with.
Oh, man. That's how you want to start?
Yeah. We got to get into this. We got to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number one.
Okay.
Now, hold on. Can I mention this is from the new team? Nick Spencer is writing. Ryan Ottley is on art. You probably know him from Invincible and other things. He's Pete, you're going nuts.
Yes.
You're going nuts. I don't mean to interrupt my spiel here at the beginning, but what's going on?
Well, let me get this straight.
Yes.
Nick Spencer, writer of Marvel.
Yep.
Does a horrible job with Captain America.
I'm going to disagree with you completely,
sure.
But go on.
Destroys the whole image of Captain America.
Wrong.
Kicks
gun.
Us in the nuts. Pulls Dent. Our nutsack over our face. Punches us in the face a bunch of times. And then they turn around and give him Amazing Spider-Man number one after that?
Can you just admit for a second that if he was actually able to take our nutsacks and put them over our face and punch them in our face, that'd be pretty impressive, right?
No.
That's an incredible
thing. That is
for you, that's not great for you,
right.
But I'm saying for Nick Spencer to be able to do that is an incredible feat of not just strength, but also elasticity of the scrotum.
Well, you know, they say, you know, I'm not even going to get it. All right. So I just couldn't believe. Like, has Marvel lost their goddamn minds?
No.
There's not any other writers that they can go to?
Sure there are. Sure.
Oh, I'm getting tired of getting kicked in the nuts by Marvel.
Okay, listen. I'm not going to disagree that some people potentially find Nick Spencer problematic, all right?
Sure.
I get that. I understand that.
Cool.
But he's written some really good things. He's been a very reliable writer for the most part. Personally, I thought Secret Empire was interesting.
Congrats for you personally. Congrats.
Thank you so much. I'm a big fan of Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Which
I know
was
that
a
about
lot
you.
Of fun.
I do a show with you and I get to hear what you say.
Every week.
Yeah.
Every week I talk about that title. If you didn't read that, that was a riff on the Sinister Six, but with a bunch of lame-o villains. It was a lot of fun. It was good. Caper is creative. I think that's probably more than anything why he got the job here, picking up from Dan Slott's epic run on Spider-Man. And you get a little bit of a sense of that. There's a setup of the free Comic Book Day issue, but Peter Parker has been, up until this issue, he's been the science editor at the Daily Bugle. He's living in a roommate situation with Robbie Robertson's kid, and also Boomerang. He
yep.
knows that Boomerang is a bad guy, but Boomerang doesn't know, of course, that he's Spider-Man. Here's what I'll say before we get into the plot of the comic book. I realize you're upset about Nick Spencer, which is crazy. But Ryan Ottley on Spider-Man is perfection. It is so good. I love Ryan Ottley. I think his art on Invincible is great. I think his character designs here. The book basically jumps around in time. It shows how the old Parker luck kicks in again, wiping away everything good in his life, mostly everything good in his life. We'll get to that in a second. We'll get to big spoilers in a second. You get some classic alien invasion type things, which we've seen Ryan Ottley do a ton in Invincible, and it does really well here. But again, I think it's funny and it's light and it's enjoyable. I don't think it's that much different necessarily from Dan Slott's run, but we'll have to see where it gets into. This is very much a setup issue. This is very much cleaning the slate so we can get into whatever Nick Spencer and Ryan Ottley are doing on this title.
I'm so fucking worried.
Can we talk about what you're worried about?
Yeah, but I want to also talk about the art, because I thought, first off, Ryan's an amazing artist. But
oh, you're on a first name basis with him.
Sure. I also didn't want to mispronounce his last name, but thanks for making me a dick. I attach him to Invincible.
Okay.
Any other artist, it's a completely different comic. I love Invincible. This was weird for me to see Invincible art on Spider-Man. Like, it took me a little bit to get into it because it's such an iconic art style that I was like, oh, man, this is weird. And then as I got to the last page and finally read who the writer was, I was like, motherfucker.
Wait. So you didn't know it was Nick Spencer until you got the last page.
Yep.
How did you feel about it the entire time you were reading it before you realized it was Nick Spencer?
I was sweating profusely because I was like, you're toying with my goddamn emotions, having MJ in the beginning and MJ at the end, because it seems like I might be excited about what's happening, but now that I know who's driving the ship, it's just going to be a fucking nightmare.
All right, let's talk about this. Yeah. So this is probably the big spoiler of the issue. By the end of the issue, Peter and MJ are back together, Pete.
I can't believe it's true. I wanted it for so long. If that's true, if they are back together, why did we have to go through all this shit?
What are you talking about?
Why did we have to break them up just to get them back together?
It's been like 10 years, Pete.
It has not been 10 years.
Sure it has.
Oh, it doesn't.
I don't know. I don't know exactly how long it's been, but it's really been a while.
They belong together.
Sure. So why aren't you happy?
I want to believe it's true, but the guy who just made Captain America Nazi is driving, so I don't know what's going to happen.
What do you think? Like, she's the mad thinker or something?
Maybe. I wouldn't put it past him, because it seems like Marvel's going like, what would piss people off the most? Oh, man, you know what would be insane? Is if we make Captain America a Nazi. Oh, don't do that. That would be crazy. Do you know what would be insane? If you tease the fact that MJ and Peter Parker are finally going to get back together, but then it was just a fucking clone or whatever.
Well, okay. There's definitely going to be twists and turns. There's definitely a lot of stuff thrown in there. There's a couple of backup stories where also fun twists and turns come up with some classic villains, some new stuff for Mysterio, some new stuff for the Lizard as well. There's a lot of fun stuff being set up here, but I think that's part of the journey. Like, you get to see them back together, but it's not all happiness and roses from here.
Yeah.
Here, to get totally real with you for a second, Pete, all right?
Please.
I have long held that it doesn't make any sense when people constantly break up and then get back together in fiction or in real life, because you get back together because you feel this rush of endorphins, or you've been put in some sort of situation where suddenly things feel like they're different. But mostly people only change by small degrees. So when they do get back together, those problems that broke you up in the first place are still there underneath the surface.
Yep.
And either you do need to go through some sort of cataclysmic change, or it's just not going to work out. Here, I think it's going to be the same thing, and that's what they're going to need to deal with, is that the reason they broke up in the first place, which is the devil, is still there.
Right. They made a fucking deal with the devil.
They made a deal with the devil. I'll also mention, Mephisto gets brought up in this issue.
Oh, I know.
So it's coming, dude.
I know.
It is coming, but that's going to be an obstacle. That's a roadblock that they're
I'm
going to have
for
to
some
deal
closure.
With. Closure?
Yeah.
Like they both die or something?
Jesus, why would you do that?
I mean, I don't know.
No, I'm saying at least
they also mentioned Superior Spider-Man on this issue. It would be nice to have the real Spider-Man, Doc Ock, back in his body.
Shut your mouth. That is a ridiculous thing to say.
All right, I'm just dealing you down.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this journey. I'm excited to see where it goes. I feel like there was a lot of narration in the issue. And like I said, it was a lot of setup and clearing the deck to get to other things. But I think the place that it ends up in is a lot of fun. There's a good new villain that's introduced in this issue. It does have those fun notes of Superior Foes of Spider-Man. So I'm excited to see where it goes.
Also, like, it's one of those things where why she did what she did is something that I'm dying to know.
So you think we'll find that out?
I would love to find that out. I want it to make sense.
I have a good feeling that they are going to come back to that, and I think it will be interesting. I don't think they're going to be together in the long run, because I think they're still going to run into problems, but I'm excited to see where it goes.
All right, so let's say We do a podcast together, right?
For the sake of argument, sure.
Yeah, sure. And then I just one day turned to a devil, whisper something in his ear, and then disappear forever. Wouldn't you want to know what happened if I saw you later?
Sure, but they don't. Well, she remembers, but he doesn't, right?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I believe so. So he doesn't actually even know what happened.
Right. But we know.
Yeah, we know.
It's driving me insane.
Driven you insane.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, 100%.
Thank you.
Again.
By the way, my therapist doesn't get this at all.
Is that what we're doing here? All right, let's move on to another title. Talk about a big DC Comics release, Superman number one. Now, this is following up directly on Brian Michael Bendis's short run on Man of Steel number one through six. If you didn't pick that up, I'm sorry, because it's going to be kind of a steep climb getting into this. But basically, Superman swinging single dude in the city.
Oh, man.
His wife is out on a vacay with their son, with his grandpa. And, yeah, he's lost communication with them, so he decides to head out in the universe to track them down. There's a new Fortress of Solitude in this issue. What did you think about this issue? I think we mostly enjoy the Man of Steel run, but how do you feel, like, how did this pan out as he's Superman number one?
I thought this was a solid first issue. I really liked the bit of him talking to Jean and being like, having to keep interrupting him so he goes save the day. I thought that was like a really cool kind of fun bit. And I felt like this was a powerful issue where Superman's dealing with the fact of like, he doesn't know where his family is, and it's, you know, and it's hard on him. And I thought this was a solid first issue. I'm still kind of getting used to the look of Superman, but I'm on board. I'm excited to see what Bendis is going to do.
Yeah, mostly I liked it. Like I said, I think if you're coming in thinking, hey, great, Superman number one, it's a little bit of a heavy lift because it's picking up on a ton of other plot lines from a ton of other comic books, which is not my favorite. Also, I'm still very much getting used to Brian Michael Bendis layouts and his dialogue coming out of DC characters. It's been an interesting journey to sort of embrace that. But like you said, he's come up with some really fun, cool bits for Superman to do. I like the fact that he didn't just ditch Lois and John and get rid of them out of the cast, that is an ongoing storyline that is going to force Superman into new situations that he's not used to.
I mean, personally, I can't believe he let his grandpa take his son.
Neither can I. I was a little weirded out by that.
Yo, dude. Particularly, what did you think was going to happen when you gave it to your sketchy ass dad?
Well, I mean, he was pretty straight up about it. I think Bendis came up with a twist on Jor-El where Jor-El is semi-benevolent. He's still kind of an asshole, but he's a benevolent asshole.
I mean, I don't have kids.
He's like Richard Branson.
There's no way I would just get over my kid to that.
No, 100% not. Yeah. I like the reasoning for Lois leaving. I like that she's going to write a book while she's out there. I think end of the day, Superman's going to find them, and maybe they won't even be in trouble. They'll be like, what are you doing here? Yeah. We're a camp, Dad. Leave me alone.
Yeah, like, oh my God, Dad, stop.
Oh, this is so embarrassing. I'm with my friends, Dad. Let's talk about an Image comic book, Farmhand number one. This book is Crazy Pads.
Yeah. Hey, if you like chew but want something grosser, check out Farmhand.
Right. So this is from the artist of Chew. The idea of the book is, I guess it takes place at some point in the future. There's a family that is reconnecting over the family business, which is to grow excess parts on trees. So very gross, very weird. A lot of body horror stuff going on here. But I thought it was interesting. It was not what I expected at all, and not a world that I think I've ever seen before. So just in of that, it was really kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, again, the problem for me was that I associate the art so much with Chew that I kept waiting for like a character to come in that I would know from that series, and it never happened because it's completely different. But I think it's creative. I think it's different, and I'm excited to see where this goes. I'm not completely like, this is amazing, but I'm on board.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of weird stuff that's set up in the first issue with venomous plants and body parts and things growing out of people's bodies. But there's also a good family story going on here, which gives it a nice base. The fact that everybody treats everything very reasonably and calmly as, oh, this is fine. We're just growing ears and organs on trees. It's not a big deal. No big deal, except for the people that are like, yeah, that's kind of gross.
Yeah.
So there's still, again, if you are a fan of Chew, there's little jokes and things happening in the background as things go on. So it's definitely a very different book to check out and a nice, what would you call it afterwards?
A pairing.
Oh, a nice pairing.
Yeah.
Chew, I like it. Very good. Another book to talk about. Let's talk about Boom Studios' Ruin World, number one. Now, this comes from their, I believe, Kaboom imprint, which is for kids. I thought this book was a lot of fun. Again,
now, as soon as I read it, I was like, Zelbin loves this.
It's a bunch of animals going on quests in a fantasy world. Here's what I did like about it beyond that, because the designs are cute, and we're introduced to some very cute-looking characters going on this quest. Yeah. It's very much video game quest, which I liked taking that specific tone.
Yeah.
That it's all about, well, we got to find this map. We found this map, and now we got to do these things to unlock this quest. We got a platform here. We released a big monster. So I enjoyed that. And by the end of the book, they open it. It starts as basically a comedy bit, comedy duo between a warrior and a, I guess, mage's apprentice trying to find treasure. We end up finding out more about the world and the conflicts that they're going to face over the next couple of the issues by the end. And again, I thought it was very fun and very charming.
Yeah, I just, I thought it was a lot of fun, and the art's amazing, and I love the main badass character. I just feel like, don't give the not smarter, not fully together character the map. You know what I mean? Like, don't do that. That's like City Slickers. Yeah. Like, you don't give the dumbest dude.
Sorry, City Slickers, the best movie ever made.
Okay. I mean, it's up there. It's a great movie, but I don't know if I'd say that.
Top five?
I don't think it's top five.
Ooh, top four then.
You're going the wrong way.
Okay.
Anyways, just was like, what did you think was going to happen when you gave the little pig guy the map? Were you surprised when you woke up and it was gone? Really?
Don't give a pig a map. That's the basic lesson of Ruin World.
Yep.
Let's talk about another DC comic book, The Flash, number 50. This is the big conclusion to Flash War, which is a storyline that's found Wally West coming up against Barry Allen, all manipulated by Zoom, of course, who now has also taken on the mantle of Flash. So you hate this because it's a bunch of people running fast and that you feel like that's all it is. I love this because I love Wally West. He's my absolute favorite Flash, and this has been toying with my emotions in the absolute best worst way, because it's all about Wally West before the continuity reboot, back when he had kids that also had superpowers. It's been teasing their return. He's been trying to save them from inside the Speed Force. By the end of the issue, we get some major changes to the Speed Force, major new powers and things. You are shaking your head right now. What's going on, Pete?
Yeah. The Sage Force? Come on, bro. Like, it's bad enough that we have the Speed Force. Now there's, like, the Sage Force and the Comedy Force.
Have you ever cooked with sage? Sage is delicious.
Sure.
You crisp up a little sage and some butter.
Oh, man. Just stop with all the forces. Please stop with all the forces. Also, you've got two guys who look pretty much exactly the same, and I'm having a hard time keeping track of who's who, and they're not helping at all. And it is just like confusing.
Oh, I'm
as
sorry.
Fuck.
All flashes look the same to you? Is that what's going on, Pete? Come on, Pete. Don't be flashist.
Okay. I might be flashist.
I guess I would say it is hard for me to separate my feelings from loving the Flash and loving the characters.
I know what
the
it's
Flash.
Like when it's hard to separate your feelings.
But coming at this as a Flash fan, I think Joshua Williamson is doing a great job reinventing the mythology and playing and tweaking around with it. Howard Porter is on art, and he is a superb, best Flash artist of all time, maybe.
Nope. Francis Manapul.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
All right. Hey, all artists are good. Well,
every single artist.
I don't know if that's true.
And there's a return at the end of the comic book that I yelled out loud.
I was so excited about that.
I
love that. I had no idea who that guy was, but I was like, man, here's the thing.
As frustrating in a certain way that DC can't let things go, I love the fact that they're like, this is it. We're wiping away the continuity, starting with a clean slate. Don't you worry about it, guys. You could just jump right in. And then 2 or 3 years later, they're like, fuck it. It's all real. All of it.
It's so confusing. It is so confusing reading this comic book.
DC has been doing a great job with their books lately in terms of letting new readers in. But at the same time, they're just like down the hill with the continuity. And as somebody who does understand the continuity, I love it. It's a bummer for anybody who's like, I just want to read comic books. What's going on with this Flash comic book? Oh, there's 45 Flashes, all with different names and the same powers. Okay. I get it. I get that it is for me and not for other people. This is the one that I'm allowing myself to have, though.
Okay.
You know? I'm usually pretty bullish about make comics for everyone. Here, this is for me. Here's another Image comic book.
Fuck off, everybody. I get a Sage Force.
Here's another Image comic book. This is a new one, Outpost Zero, number one. This, another very interesting book. Image has been launching a bunch of sci-fi books that frankly
it is number one. I saw the 32. My bad.
Oh, what are you confused about right now?
That on the cover it says 32 in the kind of area where you put the number of the comic book. So
That's some bad cover design.
Yeah,
what is the 32 referring to?
I guess it's the anniversary of Image or something.
Oh, yeah, gotta celebrate that 32nd anniversary. That's the Pouches anniversary, actually, so it's pretty appropriate for Image Comics.
Okay.
Yeah, you give pouches to your spouse. You don't get what I'm saying.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
You'll understand when you're older. Yeah. Outpost Zero takes place in a world where the few remaining humans who have colonized this planet are in a covered dome. They've lived their entire lives in there, and they find out there's a climactic event that is going to attack the dome, I guess is the way to say it. And they're all trying to survive, and some of them aren't. There are other mysteries going on the planet, of course. But mostly this is a lot of character building, this issue. What do you think about it, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, it's the classic dome life. I like the way it kind of...
It's basically like an update of Biodome.
Yeah, yeah, it's Biodome, the comic book. Yeah, I like the characters in the beginning. They kind of kept threatening that the dome was being attacked, and I thought that was going to happen in this issue, but it doesn't, and so that was a little bit of a letdown, but, it was just a lot of character stuff, which I was like, okay, but, you know, it's a solid first issue. I'll pick up the next one. I'm not, like, super geeked out about it. I liked the whole idea of, like, hey, we can jump because there's a thing with gravity because of the, I like that idea, but then that didn't happen. So,
you know, it's like, interesting. I feel like there are a lot of books that kind of draw out their first issue. They have a big first page and they have a big last page, but not a lot going on in the middle. Mm-hmm. What I appreciate about this was it felt structured a little differently to me. It felt like it was spending those time on the characters, really revealing bits about them and delineating them in a nice way that I appreciated, so that you could actually tell them apart, which is a big lift with the first issue.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that.
Cool.
Let's go over to another DC comic book, Wonder Woman number 50. This is finishing up the Dark Gods storyline. Now, Wonder Woman, through a series of hilarious circumstances, let some gigantic dark gods into our universe. Her brother, Jason, has been taken over by the dark gods as we go into this issue, and we find out what happened and wrap up that storyline. What'd you feel about this issue, Pete?
I thought it was a good issue. I love the Wonder Woman and Steve stuff. You know, I thought that was adorable. And then we got like a big battle in between. So I like the sandwich of love that happened. It was like a little bit of love in the beginning, whole lot of action, a little love at the end. Mm. I really liked it.
I got to be honest, I don't like Wonder Woman that much right now. I love the character. I've loved several runs on Wonder Woman.
Yep.
But this run right now is doing nothing for me. The Steve Diana dialogue sounds very wooden and stilted to me.
You watch your mouth.
Okay, wait. It seems stilted to me. I said that more carefully this time. Is
that
all right?
That's not what I meant.
I don't really care about Jason, so spoiler, I'm glad he's gone. The Dark Gods didn't seem like much of a threat. I don't think I really understand what Wonder Woman is or what her mission is at this point in this particular comic book, so I'm not in love with it. I don't mean to crap on it too much, and certainly if you like Wonder Woman, and I'm glad you like this title, this is just not the right Wonder Woman for me.
I think. James Robinson's writing it and hasn't been that.
He's great.
He's a great writer.
He's a great writer. There's something about his writing that does not work on this title for me.
Yeah.
I think when he handles characters like The Shade, for example, that have a bit of a feat nature to them, it works really nicely. His prose works really nicely. But here, there's something, I think, more earthy or human that needs to come out in Wonder Woman, and it's not really coming out in this series right now. My two cents.
Cool.
Last one to talk about, big relaunch, X-23, number one, also from Marvel Comics. Now, this is coming from, I'm definitely going to pronounce her name wrong, but Marika Tamako, who previously worked on She-Hulk, which I loved that reboot of that book. She also wrote Supergirl Being Human, which was a prestige format miniseries from DC Comics, which also was fantastic. This is taking X-23, previously Wolverine, and moving her back to be X-23 again, still working with her younger sister clone, Honey Badger, and mixing it up with some X-Men characters. Pete, I know you've loved the all-new Wolverine series to the point where you said you might almost like it more than real Wolverine.
I know. It's
been new writer, old hero name. How'd you feel about this?
I thought this was a fantastic issue.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
I really love X-23. I really love the choices they're making with her. And I love the sister dynamic. I also love how, like, the younger sister is just having fun. You know, like, she's getting things thrown at her, and she's like, whoa, cool. And, like, no, she can heal, so she's not quick to, like, get out of the way or anything. I just love the way she's being portrayed. And I think it's really cool. And, I think this is a really crazy issue, and it sets things up that makes me really can't wait for the next one.
I agree. I didn't know
that cuckoo shit was insane.
Yes. So I think this is a pretty big spoiler, but the antagonists of the first issue are the Cuckoo Sisters, who are clones of Emma Frost.
Creepy.
Very creepy.
Why would you want to clone Emma Frost?
Well, here's the thing She's that I love worst. About this, and this is what I love about Marika Tamako's writing, is she finds a really strong theme to play with throughout the issue. Here, even though X-23 doesn't tell anybody, it's her birthday. Later, it turns out it's the Cuckoo Sisters' birthday because they chose it. So there's a lot, and it really never occurred to me that, oh yeah, X-23 is Wolverine's clone, and the Cuckoo Sisters are Emma Frost's clone, so they kind of make perfect adversaries for each other.
Also, it's kind of like the Wolverine and Sabretooth relationship, where every day on Wolverine's birthday, Sabretooth attacks.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that. I thought this was wonderful. At the beginning, I was a little ambivalent just because it felt like, okay, here we are seeing X-23 and Honey Badger together again, just like they were in Tom Taylor's excellent run. But it very quickly delineates itself as its own thing, as its own title. The art is gorgeous throughout. I love the layouts of the book.
The layouts are really awesome.
They're fantastic. There's just all this great parallel structure between what's going on with the Cuckoo Sisters, what's going on with X-23 and Honey Badger. There's a surprise amount of downtime in the book too, where they just spend with the characters, that I thought was wonderful.
Yeah, normally I would not like it, but because of the stakes and everything, it really worked well. The only thing I really had a problem with was Beast. I don't like when Beast looks too manicured.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's been kind of like that lately. If you read Astonishing X-Men, it was sort of the same thing. I do like him sort of working as their Bosley, sending them out on missions and things. I think that's fun.
That is cool.
Yeah.
But, like, don't sit on the couch like a normal person. Hang upside down on the ceiling. Give me something. Let me know you're still Beast. You know what I mean?
You're right. I'm sorry about that. If you would like to support the show and other shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the Pit Loft in New York. Please come on by. Pete, what do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know the amazing guests we have on our live show. Also, if you do come see the show live, please let us know. There's nothing better than us getting to talk to people who listen all the time. It's really fantastic. So we get to thank you in person.
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live, our website, comicbookclublive.com, for this podcast and many more podcasts and many more things. And we'll see you at the Comic Book Shop.
Oh, yeah.